Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance with extra benefits like personal accident cover.
Well, my next guest this morning was crowned Best Actress at the recent British Film and Television Awards. Joanna Scanlon, whose grandfather hails from Cork, was the rank outsider on the night with the bookies offering odds of 7-1. However, her win at the Royal Albert Hall surprised and thrilled many, not least herself. Joanna Scanlon, good morning to you and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Lovely to talk to you, Miriam.
Oh, I was absolutely thrilled. Your reaction on the night for the film After Love, was it a huge surprise?
Yes, it was. I mean, we were in quite illustrious company. You know, Lady Gaga, I think, just her very presence and the fact that she was on the list. And she's such a kind of consummate, extraordinary person. Plus the fact that that film, you know, is much more a big commercial film, which has done pretty well. And she's, you know, she's a goddess, isn't she? So yeah. I really wasn't expecting that. And knowing that it comes from the voters, you know, many of whom perhaps wouldn't have necessarily heard of me or seen the film. That was really, the expectation. I'd been to a party the night before because there's a sort of little, you know, parade that you have to go on. And everybody said, I'd love to see the film at some point, but I haven't seen it yet. So I was thinking, well, nobody could have possibly voted because they haven't seen the film.
It's such a wonderful film. We'll talk about that in a moment. But you'd also won Best Actress for it at the Dublin International Film Festival last year, hadn't you? Tell us, for people who don't know the film, tell us a little bit about it, Joanna.
Yeah, well, the brilliant Irish critics, of course, early adopters there. and that was a lovely, lovely thing to win because, I mean, it's very special. Everybody on that committee is very interesting people in their own right, and they've got a lot to say about life and they fully engage with it. And I had sadly not been able to go to the event itself because it was in the COVID days when there was no travel. But I did have kind of really great Zoom chats with people as it happened. And I was very honoured by that. So, yes, Miriam, I've forgotten the question because I'm so enthused by the memories of the Dublin Critics Circle
Just
Award.
To tell us about the film After Love. It's a fascinating film, I think.
So it's about a woman who was a convert to Islam, a white woman who's a convert to Islam living in, let's say, the southeast. When we meet her, it's 30 years later. She's been married for 30 years to her husband, Ahmed. They're living in Dover. He works on the ferries. And in the first scene of the film, this is no spoiler, really, he very unexpectedly dies. And when she starts to unpick his belongings, she discovers that he's had a secret life, effectively, over the water in Calais in France. And she goes to investigate and in the process goes undercover, really. And so the film takes her and the audience on a bit of a journey of discovery. You might see it as a bit of a sort of revenge tale. And in other ways, it's very much a story about growth and how we meet our circumstances and how we can those circumstances, even if they are terrible, can be an opportunity to become a better human being.
When you won the BAFTA, Joanna, it was just a beautiful acceptance speech. And you said after it, I'm 60, I'm older, and I'm not the right shape and size. What did you mean by all of that?
Well, I think film, we associate with glamour, allure, youth, dewy skin, you know, lithe, well, not even lithe, actually, kind of, you know, jockey level underweightness. And so I think it's quite an unusual thing to be able to inhabit and be allowed to inhabit. Isn't this the thing? To be given an opportunity to become an object for the camera in that way. I don't personally think there's anything remarkable about what I did. But I do think there is something very remarkable about being given that opportunity. And I put that down to the way that the BFI, the BBC, the lottery funding, small independent cinema, you know, does give opportunities to look at things that isn't normally the case. And I think we've proved, actually, that that is just as captivating for an audience to go on that emotional journey with Mary, my character, as it is to go on a very glamorous journey with, I don't know, let's say Charlize Theron.
No, it's a remarkable film. Now, your own story, talk about remarkable, is pretty remarkable. I know you were born in Cheshire, but with a name like Scanlon, even on the night I was thinking, she must have some Irish roots. And your granddad, I gather, was Irish.
He was, yes. My grandfather and his brother and his father left County Cork, Passage West, in 1921, and they moved to Birkenhead. And they worked, my grandfather worked at Camel Laird Shipyard. He was a shipwright. That's my great-grandfather, I beg your pardon. And my grandfather, his son, was actually killed during the Second World War. He was a fighter navigator for the RAF, of fighter planes, and he was killed on a bombing raid. And now, the problem with that is that there's a lot of the family history we've never been able to find. His brother, the remaining brother, was called Robert Scanlon, and he actually was a very successful commercial artist in Britain and reputedly is one of the people who helped design the Kit Kat wrapper and drew Tony the Tiger, both for J. Walter Thompson advertising. But he would never speak of life in Ireland. So none of us can find out. Anyway, he's now long dead, of course, and we can never find out any more detail. So anyone who can help us who's listening, please do. Be wonderful.
You'll have to do Who Do You Think You Are? You'd be fascinating.
Wouldn't it be great?
Yeah.
Yes, I have to say, I would love to do Who Do You Think You Are? I mean, I think everybody in the country should be allowed the opportunity to do Who Do You Think You Are? Because where we come from and our ancestry, I firmly believe, dictates a lot of our life. And the things that are unknown are just as powerful as the things that are known.
Definitely. And then you grew up in Wales, did you, for part of the time in a hotel? And did you always want to do acting?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. So my parents moved from the Wirral, moved to North Wales when I was three. My mum very much wanted to bring us up in the countryside with animals and so forth. And then after a few 10 years or so, my parents bought a hotel and we carried on there. But the acting came really from, again, this is very much to do with the Irish, because I went to a school called the Brigidine Convent, which was run by the Brigidine Order of Nuns.
Yeah.
They were an unusual bunch, Mother Dolores and Sister Elizabeth particularly, because they were showbiz mad. They really genuinely were showbiz mad. Now, I was only a little girl, but I have vivid memories of them bringing from London, and this is during the 1960s, which seems implausible, but bringing from London every Tuesday, a dance teacher and an elocution teacher. They would arrive on the train at Tyrrell and then be brought to the school, teach us all day, and then go back. And what happened was that we would put on an annual pantomime. Basically, academic study was suspended for the autumn term, whilst in rehearsals took place instead. And these pantomimes were really quite spectacular and became renowned within the county. It was very hard to get a ticket. We'd put them on for a whole week. Everybody would come. And that was my first ever performance when I was 4 years old, playing a panda. And then it kind of went from there. I mean, I fell in love with the performing very young.
So interesting. And you ended up, of course, in the end after school, going to Cambridge, Joanna. You described it, reading in preparation for this interview with you, you've described it as an incredibly hostile male environment. Tell me about what it was like there.
It was actually. I went in the year 1980, and the way people go to Cambridge University, or did, I don't know exactly if it's the same now, is that you don't really apply to the university, you apply to a college. And that college chooses to take you or reject you. And I scrolled through all the colleges, and the one that I chose was Queen's College, because it was going to be the first year of women. And I felt like it was an exciting prospect to be part of the history of being the first year of women at any Cambridge college, after, you know, 300 to 400, 500 years worth of those colleges being a male preserve. And I thought this was going to be a very exciting thing. And indeed it was in many respects, but what we encountered was a really puerile, juvenile, aggressive kind of male culture amongst the undergraduates. I don't And I guess that was probably throughout the university. I mean, by then, some colleges had already gone co-ed, but not all of them had. And there was an assumption, for example, I remember they were worried that, you know, sanitary products, where was that going to happen? So there was just one machine put up inside one loo in the whole college, which had a Tampax machine in it. And they put up this wallpaper, this pretty pink wallpaper, because they thought that that was going to make it sort of more suitable for young ladies. It was a complete, I think they were frightened, and there was a sort of horror at the notion of women coming into that space. And it did get very aggressive and unpleasant. And I don't know whether you would say that it was actually malign in the sense that anybody was intending aggression, but it definitely felt, and for me, I wasn't prepared for it at all. And it made me just want to retreat and hide in my room, which I pretty much did for my whole first year.
You did join the famed Footlights Theatre Group, and of course, we all hear about that, associated with people like Emma Thompson, Stephen Fry, Hugh Laurie, others. They started out there. But at that time, is this right, Joanna? The glittering success, I suppose, that seemed to come very easily their way. It didn't initially so easily land in your path, did it?
No, it didn't. But this was partly of my own making. There was a funny old thing at that point in time, which was if you did the Footlight, a thing called the Footlights May Week, which was a review that you did it at the university in the early summer and then took it on tour around the country and then ended up at the Edinburgh Festival, you got what was required at that point to be able to work professionally, which was an equity card. And I was offered a place to do that, but I really didn't want to do that May Week, and I didn't want to do the review. I wanted to do a play in Edinburgh, which was more of a drama. And so that's what I chose. I went off and did that. But of course, that was, well, you could argue it's a big, big regret, and also not, because in many ways I don't regret the journey that I've been on at all. But if I had gone and done that May Week and got that equity card, I would have then been able probably to have got a job early on.
Interesting. You ended up lecturing in drama for a while, I think, didn't you, in Leicester Poly? And you've also said, Joanna, in the past that you felt at the time it was like trying to join a party you weren't invited to. Did you find that difficult at first? I mean, look, your story is now one of glorious success. But at that time, did you find that tricky?
Oh, goodness, yes. I felt what happened was I went into teaching because I couldn't get a job as an actor. And then I try to sort of suppress that dream, really, just say to myself, well, that's fine. You know, this very honourable profession, teaching. I've learned a lot myself from teachers. I'm very happy to do this. But something was denied that would not be denied. And eventually I gave up the job and I was very unwell and I had to go and start again as an actor. And at that point, I did find it very humiliating, because a lot of people I knew, you know, I was quite long in the tooth then. I was in my mid-30s nearly, and a lot of people I knew were doing terribly, terribly well. They were famous, and it was deeply humiliating. I think one of the lessons of it for me was that sometimes in life you just have to suck up that feeling of embarrassment and humiliation about presenting yourself as you truly are to the world. That's what it felt like. I knew it was do or die. I've either got to say very embarrassingly, actually, this is what I'd like to do too, and be met with whatever came my way, or I would not really thrive. And so picking up the phone and saying, oh, hello, you remember me? Just wondering if you've got any jobs going at the moment, was something I absolutely had to do. But even now, I'm sort of like, my hairline is sweating in the memory of it. It's cringy.
I think also, Joanna, you've remained very grateful, haven't you, to a GP who almost propelled you back or helped you get back into acting.
Yes, that's right, Miriam. He was actually a consultant physician, but he was at the hospital, local hospital, and he was asked to kind of do a full diagnostic survey of me because I was very unwell and nobody could work out what was wrong with me, really. And, you know, he did all the tests and then he asked me a couple of questions. And then he said, is there anything else you ever wanted to any other work you ever wanted to do? And I said, yes, I had very much hoped to act. And he said, he looked at me and it was a very simple statement. He just said, okay, I think if you don't go back to acting, you'll be ill for the rest of your life. And as he said it, I had this recognition of the truth of the statement. I suddenly thought, oh no, I think that's true. Darn it. That means I have got a lot of unpicking of my life to do in order to take that path. And duly, I did have a lot of unpicking to do. I had all sorts of, you know, financial commitments. And I had, at that point, I still had the full-time job. It was all sorts of things, not least then latterly having to, you know, step up and go through the humiliation of joining that club. Yes, so I do have a lot to thank him for, because I do believe that people who have access to patients can sometimes offer things that are not necessarily out of the usual medical bag, but are hugely insightful and give opportunities for people to start giving themselves opportunities to heal, you know, where organic disease is not the primary problem. Mm-hmm. I think doctors are very, very influential. We know they are. But it's not just the science of medicine, it's the art of medicine too.
So interesting. Thank God he did put you back into acting, because you've given us so many roles. One of my favourite roles of yours is your role in The Thick of It. Did you love that?
Yes, I did, actually. I did. It's sometimes difficult, you know, sometimes great work comes out of difficult circumstances. But I would say for myself, that was never the case with The Thick of It. It was a pleasure from day one to the last day. It really was. It was great fun. It was very happy time. My character was much maligned. Terry Coverley is a much maligned character. Yeah. Everybody always seemed to think, the characters in the show seem to think she's wrong and that she's an idiot. And some of the public do as well. But I still maintain that pretty much everything Terry ever said was quite correct.
I love her. The lovely thing is as well, in your BAFTA speech, it's the one line I always look out for. You know, you pay tribute to your husband, Neil, and was saying, you know, there's no truth in afterlove. Now, what did you say about it?
Well, I just said that, you know, he's the living proof to me that there is no such thing as afterlove, because, you know, the love goes on. And I think life is very tough when you don't feel loved, really tough. And I do feel very loved by him. And that is the foundation, not just of work, but of every aspect of our lives.
And, you know, once again, you didn't do the usual trajectory of marrying your sweetheart at 22. I think you met him at a yoga festival in your 40s.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it was a week I sort of booked this week for myself. It is the classic, you know, rom-com tale of I decided most definitely I was giving up on all hopes of romance, that I was going to take a week entirely for myself, that I was, you know, if somebody gave me the glad eye across the yoga mat, I was going to ignore them completely, that this was all for me. And I was usually, you know, up until that point, I was always on the lookout. But that particular week, I had vowed that it was going to be a very quiet week just for me. And then bingo.
Look, it's so great. I could talk to you forever. Paul Abbott, the creator of Cracker and Shameless, he now said after your BAFTA win, you'll be disappearing into Netflix and Hollywood. Is that what you feel now about yourself? And do you just feel so happy now that you did win it?
At my age, I feel I can appreciate it. You know, I can appreciate that I've worked a lot and I've enjoyed my work. And it's a lovely thing to be honoured by peers for that. You know, if it was at the start of a career, I'm not sure I would have appreciated the value of it.
Well, Joanna Scanlon, crowned Best Actress at the BAFTAs recently for that amazing film, Afterlove. Everyone should go and see it. I, like everyone else, was absolutely thrilled for you. Thanks very much for being my guest this morning. Come to Ireland soon, the home of your grandfather.
Now we're allowed to. I will. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Miriam.
Thank you so much. Happy Sunday. You too. Happy Sunday, Joanna. Well, that's it from us for today. Thanks so much for listening.